Hey, and welcome to another episode of Rivian Tracker Hangouts. My name is Jose, and I am here today with Mike Calcara. And you're probably wondering, who's Mike? Never heard of him. Well, that's okay. Mike is a good friend of mine. We've met at a couple of Rivian events. We also met at the North Carolina IANA opening in Apex, North Carolina. Super nice guy. He's been following Rivian Tracker for a while. And he has his own business called the Driveway Concierge. It's a business that helps you find the ride of your dreams, right? So you can drive away, whether it's a Rivian or any type of vehicle. Mike is here to help you with his business, the Driveway Concierge, to be able to get you kind of the vehicle of your dreams. And so Mike is also a Rivian owner, and we've kind of chit-chatted a bit of back and forth on social media about Rivian, his ownership experience. And we also want to touch base a little bit on other things that are happening in the EV industry right now, such as the recent announcement of the Slate EV, which is a new affordable, cheap EV that's coming built here in America. And we can talk about dealerships too, because Mike does have experience dealing with dealerships directly. And so I want to get his take and talk a little bit about what the future of that looks like. So join me as we talk with Mike here from the Driveway Concierge and talk all things Rivian, EV, and more on this week's episode of Rivian Tracker Hangouts. Mike, thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
Jose, it's great to be on. I'm doing really well. How are you?
Good, man. Good to have you here. We've had a couple of times to chat. We met up in North Carolina. Was that last year? I don't even remember if it was last year or earlier this year. I think it was the end of last year for the opening of the IANA Rechargery in Apex, because you are a North Carolina native, so you're out in that area, and so you came out to check it out. What did you think of that? I'm curious to get your thoughts.
Well, I'm a New Jersey native, and that'll probably come out in my accent at some point in this conversation. But I have been in Charlotte for a good while now. I thought the charging whole experience there was great. I think seeing everybody turn out was awesome. Meeting you for the first time was terrific in person, and you know, I think that's that type of experience has to be sort of like more broadly broadcast, right? So that folks can see, hey, look, you know, when you're at a charging station, it's not just for charging, right? There's a lot more you can do there and make use of that time. So.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, and since we went to that, IANA is only continuing to expand and grow, right? They've continued to open more and more of these locations around the country, and even more and more so, like the opportunity to have these type of like cultural centers, if I could even use that word, around EV charging, right, where people can go hang out, not just charge, but chill, relax.
It's an experience. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an experience. Exactly. But Mike, let's rewind a little bit. Let's talk about your Rivian experience. I like to always talk about that with everybody I have on, if they own a Rivian. And talk to me a little bit about how you got introduced to Rivian. You own a Rivian now. So I'm curious to know, you know, what got you into it? What has your experience been like? And your journey with Rivian so far.
Sure. So I had a pre-order. So I've been kind of following the brand for a number of years now, right? Pre-price hike. And have an R1S quad motor, first gen. It's been, you know, I'm in the dream job, right? I have this opportunity to do what I love. I've had a bunch of cars, I think somewhere close to 20. And I'd say the Rivian is easily in the top three. You know, depending on kind of what metrics you're looking at. But in terms of, you know, day-to-day drive and the functionality, it's been terrific. And I think that, you know, given the job I have now and what I'm doing with clients, there are some, you know, we've all had them, right? Like some of the quirks, if you will. Quirks and features, if you want to call it that.
Yep.
You know, so depending on how you look at them. You know, my experience has been good. We could talk a little bit about kind of my service center experience as well, and how that I think has positively evolved over the past, I guess I've had it about it'll be a year in May, so 1 year so I got the Gen 1 quad at the end of its sort of life cycle, if you will.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, yeah, let's talk a little bit, because you're out in Charlotte. Charlotte right now doesn't really have a proper service center, right? And so they're getting one built out. Opening date TBD, but I'm curious to know, like, yes, you've had some service issues from what you've told me, not uncommon with Rivian and EVs in general, but tell me what that's been like, especially living away, because your near service center is, if I'm not mistaken, Duncan, South Carolina. I don't know, how many hours is that away from you?
It's about an hour and a half now, but prior to Dunkin opening, which was a couple months ago, Atlanta would be the closest. So that's that's a 4-hour hike, right? So that's a different conversation altogether.
Talk to me a little bit about tell me about your service experience. And I mean, clearly now you're closer to a service center, but before that, wow, Atlanta is a jump away. You know, it's pretty far. How did you feel with owning a vehicle that, you know, couldn't be serviced, you know, right around the corner, like, you know, how you have a Toyota dealership everywhere.
Sure.
You can just, you know, drive in and get a service anywhere you are.
Well, I think at some point we all signed that paperwork that said like, hey, your service center, you know, it may not be close to you. And you kind of sign it and you're like, okay, well, you know, yeah, we'll worry about it when I need to worry about it, right? And so I did need to worry about it last August. I had a critical battery error. It was sort of tied to the 12-volt, but they ended up needing to do quite a bit of work. So they took it, they towed it because the car was inoperable at all. So by the time I got home, it died like a couple of days later in the garage, which was sort of an adventure to get it out, but we did. And they flatbedded it down to Atlanta. I did also have a couple of the recalls done simultaneously, which was actually, they were great about it. They were like, okay, no problem. I think there was an HVAC one and something else with the suspension, I believe. Could only be done in the service center itself, right? So I sort of took advantage of that opportunity. I said, well, it's down there. Let's make sure this is, you know,
time let's do spent. It all.
Right. Yeah. So they actually had the car for about a month. But that was not on Rivian. That was the first, like, because I know there's some conversation about, you know, the car sitting there for a while. In my experience, it did sit there for a couple of days before they got to it to fix it. But then after that, I sort of interjected and said, hey, can we get the recalls done? And they were open, they beyond open. They were like, sure, not a problem. Didn't have to, like, you know, push for anything. That just delayed things a little bit. So then it sat there for another. So just for the context of why it took a month, right? It took another getting queue and everything. And they did want me to come, you know, pick it back up from Atlanta. I was like, you're crazy. But I do understand that that's what, you know, I signed up for. But, you know, I did push a little harder and they were like, okay, cool. Well, they brought it back. During that time, I had an enterprise rental car for a couple, maybe 2 weeks or so. And then they got me a Rivian R1T, which was which was fun, a different kind of experience. And then I'm just thinking about that because that was like a launch edition. So I had some thoughts around the build quality between the two. I was very happy to get mine back.
really? That
yeah,
different,
it was,
huh?
It was, I mean, that had about 30,000 miles on it launch. Wow. And, you know, and it just, and it, you know, so, but all that to say, you know, they did get me the Rivian, you know, loaner, and that was a fine experience. And, you know, this is, can happen with anything. And I think the important thing is that Rivian takes the opportunity to quote unquote do the right thing. Right. I mean, whether you have a Ford, a Toyota, a Ferrari, whatever, right. Things are going to happen. Right. It's how you kind of navigate that. And the fact that they kind of just said, you know what, I had to ask a couple times, like, I asked them, hey, can you really consider towing it back? Because it's 4.5 hours. And they were, you know, within a phone call or two, they came around. So I say that for last August. Now, I do have I just had my the recall done for the torque, the proper torquing of the wheels. So they came and did that. They did an inspection and they found the leak in the like suspension boot and they called that out. I just talked to them today, actually. And they said it needed to go to service center. And I was like, uh-oh, here we go again. You know, like, and I said, can you pick it up? And they said, yes. So I was like, okay, cool. Now, so I think when you think about the evolution of service for Rivian right now, that's a step in a really positive direction where, you know, it wasn't like, hey, bring it to the service center. Hey, can you tow it? Sure. It was, we'll pick it up. Right. And I think that's the type of experience that clients and customers are looking for. Particularly in my role now where I'm advising folks and trying to help them find the right car for them. For the past year or so, it's been a little bit of that. Rivians are awesome, but we need to talk about service, right? And that's because I need to set expectations with my clients appropriately of what they should expect. You know, I do have another client and friend of mine who had a crazy incident with his, he's got the GPS and the, I forget what, the communication module needs to get replaced.
Yeah.
It's pretty common.
Okay.
Now he's had no GPS, no anything, no Wi-Fi, no internet at all for like 6 or 7 months because he's just too busy to get to the service center to have them do it. So, you know, he's got an appointment in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Is that because he couldn't get an appointment that soon or just his schedule?
Schedule. But okay. He still has to go to the service center. It's still, is, you know, one of those things where it's not as simple as you know, going to...
Although I do wonder, like something like that, why couldn't a mobile service appointment be dealt with? You know, like
why? And that's where, and I think that's a fair question. And it's also a question of, you know, now he's not an early adopter. He's someone who drove my Rivian 3 times around the block and they fell in love with it, right? As a lot of people do. And they were this is the car, right? It shouldn't be on the client though to ask those questions, right? Can mobile service handle it? How can we solve this, right? I think it's got to be where they are able to kind of say, hey, look, you know, we're going to do this. This is what you can do. Or even call them and say, hey, look, you know, now we have this closer service center. Are you aware of it? You know, kind of proactively handle that. And I get that it's growing pains, right? I mean, that's the type of stuff that can happen in a more mature organization where, you know, it's quite frankly a nice to have for them, right? So they can start chopping off that type of work in terms of their service center SLAs and approach and all that. But I'd rate it as good. I mean, things are going to happen with the car, right? I mean, it's not as convenient as going to an OEM, but, you know, I don't want to drive those cars. So there you are, you know?
Well, and I think this brings up a couple of good questions and topics because number one is I hear what you're saying about where I've put in service requests with Rivian, you know, for whatever it may be. And like, I think that that's something that could be done in mobile service. Now, I am not the expert, right? They are, in theory, they should be able to tell me that I'm wrong and that this is why I need to bring it into service center. But there have been scenarios where it's like, oh, you know, they don't ever suggest mobile service. So I'm like, oh, can't mobile service do that? And they're like, oh yeah, actually, yeah, mobile service can do that. And let me see if that's available. I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, like, why didn't you make that suggestion? Why did I have to bring it? I know these things, but not everybody's going to know that.
And that begs the question of, is that why some, I mean, I don't want to say it's the only reason, but some of the backup that's happening, right? It's like, what can we tackle in mobile? What are we? And then, you know, the space within those service bays is critical, right? So filling those up with stuff that can be done mobile, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, another thing to that is, you know, Rivian continues to, for some odd reason, release products. You know, I use the example just earlier this week, right? They released the Generation 2 wireless charger, right? That you can replace in your vehicle, the wireless phone charger. And now, you know, caveat to that is the wireless phone charger, the second generation that now comes into Gen 2 vehicles is no better than the first one, right? Like, yay, it has a little piece of plastic that now holds your phone a little bit better. Okay, with that caveat out of the way, because I'm not suggesting anybody actually goes and spends the money to do it, you need to book a service appointment so they will do it for you. That, to me, seems like if you just provided people with proper instructions, anybody can do it. Hey, can you remove a couple of screws and make sure that your vehicle is turned off and unplug this and plug this in and just be careful? Because I've done that before, right? Like, and I, you know, and like, I'm like, I don't think it requires to take up somebody's whole service appointment. And maybe, and, you know, maybe it's a mobile service appointment, but that's still an appointment taken out from someone, let's say like your friend who needs something a little bit more severe handled, or, you know, my vehicle is completely dead in the water and doesn't move, right? All of these appointments, and I'm sure Rivian, you know, weighs, they're ranked and weighted differently, right, on severity. Sure,
probably. Yeah.
But like, either way, if I have an appointment to get my wireless charger replaced, right, because I paid for it, respectfully, I don't care that your Rivian doesn't turn on and doesn't move, right? Like I had an appointment already at 3 o'clock. And like, now you have to bring your vehicle for emergency. And I don't know this, right? The customers
know. Of course, this, you just want the service that you
expect. Yeah. And so like, I'm like, you know, so like, these are the things where it's like, well, in that scenario, like, just find a different, there should be a different method where you can allow the end user to do it. And maybe it's a level of trust, or maybe, you know, there's a concern that, oh, they're going to electrocute themselves. I don't know, right? Completely possible. I'm not asking them to let me change out the high voltage battery in the car. I'm just saying, you know, I think I can install a wireless charger. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm a little bit more tech savvy. And I'm not saying that's the only solution. You know, there's mm-hmm. definitely a solution where if you just don't feel comfortable with it, great, we'll make an appointment for you. But there should be at least the option to say, I want to try, or I want to, you know, like, I think you and I are people where we are just trying to be considerate about the situation because we know it. And not everybody may be that way, and that's okay. But yeah, okay. So let's talk about a little bit more about service, because yeah, Rivian is slowly, you know, ramping up to get ready for R2. Very excited. I don't know if you're excited about R2, Mike.
Do you have one reserved? Yep, I do.
Yeah. Everybody's excited about R2. And Rivian really needs to step their game up for service to get ready for R2, because similar to the way Tesla really went through, you know, production hell and all that and service hell when it came to the Model 3, this is Rivian's version of that. And they need to get their, you know, I know that sounds a little harsh, but like it's the reality that they need to really get it all together, because when R2 goes out to the masses, it's going to the masses.
That's the key word. It's all my client. My clients are typically not early adopters. You know, they're not people like you and I who can say, you know, like I'm talking cars all day long. So for me to go call Rivian and hassle with them and haggle with them around getting my car shipped back, I'm just like a client for myself for at the moment, you know, like, and that's all it is. For my buddy who's dealing with his connection issues and everything and getting that module replaced, like, you know, like that's the general public, right? And those are the people that are not going to be tolerant of waiting months for service appointments and loaners, and even going, I mean, enterprise is fine. It's a good solution. I think it's a, and I mean that in a way, like good, better, best. It's a good solution. The best solution is you bring me a Rivian and just swap it out and call it a day, right? Like, I mean, it works, right? And I understand that, you know, but R2 is just going to, it's a new platform, a new vehicle, mm-hmm. right? New at a lower price point, right? So like all of these things, and I say price point just from, and I'm not going to assume it's less reliable, but like, who knows, right? You know, and it's just at that price point, you're going to have a whole lot more people who are going to be expecting a more, and frankly, Rivian's been around more. So you're going to expect a more legacy experience. What I mean by that is just mm-hmm. like the company is sort of can't play the we're the new guy card anymore. You know, like they've been around for a while. People are seeing them. There's a bunch of R1s, right? And it's like the R2 comes out. It's like, wait, you mean you guys don't have service centers in Charlotte? Like, now I say that because I have yet to see the Charlotte service center, and it's been pushed back a number of times, right? Like a few more times, they're going to bump into R2 real fast. And that's where, you know, even right now, when I talk about Rivians, you and I've talked about this. I mean, I have the caveat about the service centers. And then if they're in my vehicle, they touch the screen and the buttons don't respond. And I can tell them it's the best car. It's the top three cars I've had out of 20. And, you know, there've been a lot of really cool ones. Touch. And it's like, wait, I can't deal with that every day. You and I are like, I like everything else about it. It's fine. You know, like, but Joe Schmo out there is just not going to find that to be acceptable. And I think it's a red flag that, you know, Rivian really needs to take advantage of they just need to fix it, because it's one of those things where it's like they need to start integrating, I think, into the sort of standardized expectations of a car experience, right? And you know, I think that there's that early adopter, you know, what's the right word, like leeway you get. Okay, but again, that's gone now. And if you're offering a $50,000 two-row SUV to 3x the number of people that are buying the R1, right? I mean, if not more, right? I mean, like those things are going to quickly go by the wayside. And I think the tolerance, which I think is the other risk here, is that the tolerance for that across that segment of buyers is going to be way lower than ours is. Yeah. Right? You and I can sit there, and I can get on X and be like, the button doesn't work, right? And that's fine, right? And but like people out there, you know, who are going to talk to their friends, like, this thing's a piece of crap. It's not working. Why doesn't software work? You know, like, mm-hmm. and that's where I think, you know, it's important that they're the little stuff. Like I think it's great that we have, and you and I have talked about this too. It's great that we have the monthly updates and there's cool stuff happening. But guys, my buttons haven't worked for 9 months. Mm-hmm. Big update, right? Like, I mean, like, so you know, and for those not the the lower screen buttons, right? I mean, those.
The dock.
Yeah. They take a while, right? I know. And sometimes it takes one load, but still it's like, I mean, people, you know, they get in the car. The first thing they want to see mine, they click on the bottom and it's an atypical experience. I think it's a good way to think about it.
And I did a video about it a couple weeks ago at this point and made some people upset in Rivian, right? Because I kind of spoke the truth about how I think a lot of people have felt, but like, and I think it's fair, like, you know, with running Rivian Tracker and all that and talking about Rivian and all that, you know, you have to talk about the negative and the positive. I don't want to ever, you know, sugarcoat everything. There are situations, you know, where the software needs help, right? Like it needs assistance.
Like all software platforms do. They evolve, right? And you add more things on. Yeah. It needs more tweaking. That's normal.
Correct. And when it starts really becoming a problem is like someone with like my wife, who is not a tech person really in a big way. And she loves the car and she has Ioniq 5 and she loves it too. But when she clicks on the HVAC button to change the temperature of the fan speed, and there's a delay in there enough where she's like, and she'll click it again. And I'm like, no, you got to give it a second. She's like, why? Why is that taking so long? Now you have Joe Schmo who's noticed. And it's like, that's not good. That needs to be resolved. And I know Rivian is working on it. But to your point, why did it take, why? And as of recording of this, you know, we still don't, it's still a little wonky. But like, why is it taking so long to fix those things? I love all the new features and all that. But yes, we need to still bug fix and maintain and do all that stuff, because that is what sets, I think, a lot of other, that's what sets Rivian different from others. It's like Tesla. You look at Tesla. Tesla software is really great. It has issues here and there as well, but it's really great. And I forget if what Tesla's like release cycle looks like. I don't know if it's monthly or not, but they also probably have a bigger team. Yeah.
Frankly, I don't know if it's monthly, but it's frequent. It's more frequent than like Ford's. I've had two Teslas and a Ford Lightning. So like, it's much more frequent.
So,
and they're also a more mature platform, right? So like the level of, you know, improvement you're going to see, you know, it does lend them to more the bug fix stage, right?
Yeah.
Where they're now can kind of expedite some of that. But I think, you know, I wouldn't hate it if Rivian like simplified things. I think about like, this is just Mike's opinion, like the screen with the, like the campfire stuff and all the using all the Unreal engine and everything. I'm like, why guys, what are we doing here? I still get my buttons still don't work. I don't need the fire flickering and changing all, like it's cute, but it's like, let's get to functionality. Now I do understand that it's a balance, right? And the Knight Rider stuff is cool and all that. And it's part of the marketing and all that. Right. And you know, you and I have both been in the software side developing things in other spaces. Right. And that, it's a balance, right? And there's release schedules and you got to kind of get it all kind of squared away, and you fix one thing, you break another. And that's just kind of the space they're in. But, you know, I don't know. And, you know, especially when we keep calling them Joe Schmo, right? Like when they get there, like they care a lot less about the fire going off and more about those buttons working. And you know, I think that, because I think it starts to spiral a little bit, if that makes sense, where like the buttons don't work. You have a wonky experience, and then it's like, oh, like my buddy whose module broke, he plugged it into an EVgo charger, and it was EVgo. I got to be careful because it did not come out, and it was a mess. So they had now I did see, I think somebody posted, I don't know if it was Chris, somebody posted a way to release the internal mechanism to take out an external third-party charger from your...
Okay.
But like they had to cut the wire.
Oh, wow.
Like, I mean, it was that bad. And then like, it was, then they just, then once it was cut, he and his buddy just went back to the car and just ripped it out. Like really ripped it out after like service was there and everybody.
This is the same person?
Yeah. Same guy who had module problem. Yeah. And I don't know whether they're connected or not, but like, you know, he's just had it. But you know, you ask him though, which is funny and a great, great story for Rivian. He's still like, it's the best car I've ever had. He's got he's got no Wi-Fi, no maps, no streaming audio, no GPS, no phone. Still the best car he's ever had in a charger, you know, like, so, but you know, those are the types of things that start to, I think, need to get cleaned up before R2 comes out. And I think that, I think everybody knows it, and it's just a matter of how they go about it and just make sure they prioritize it. Because I think that that's where, you know, I'd rather see less delivered in R2 and delivered right. because I think the price point and the package, if you will, right? Like, it doesn't have to blow anybody's socks off in terms of software. Just make it work and then add to it, right? That's the biggest thing, right? Like HVAC stuff, the calibration you just talked about today, feels to me like that should be way simpler. A couple presets, a couple, you know, they have two presets, but like make them more, Joe Schmo just needs like at your face, away from your face. Like, I mean, like just like none of this like spiraling stuff. I mean, nobody likes it. And that's where it's kind of like, and simplifying that keeps the touching down, right? Where it's just like, this is just how it's going to work, you know? So I don't know, some thoughts there, but.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I mean, to back to the just original point quickly, like, you know, and software stuff can be fixed, right? But service centers, physical locations, they need to open more. There needs to be more mobile service availability. They need to, be able to do more mobile service availability, so, or more things via mobile service, right? So kind of figure out, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so those are key points, because as soon as the floodgates open with R2, it's like you're not going to get the leeway or the early adopter. You've opened up the floodgates and everybody's now going to come at you. And
the social media side, right? It's not going to be the Rivian circle that it is now, who is like, let's talk about it. And we're all kind of early adopters. It's going to be the influencers, quote unquote, of other spaces, right? Who bought it and they're like, oh my God, my Rivian left me stranded on the side of the road. And it's like,
The mom TikToker who has a huge following because of, she's a baker, is going to buy that R2, and it's going to be a nightmare. And that's not the publicity and press that Rivian is going to want to have at all. So they need to get that figured out, and sooner rather than later. And I know they're working on it, but I feel like Rivian just needs to be a little bit more transparent and have clarity and just share that information so people understand that it's coming and it's happening, so that we're not. And then also, like, maybe, people, the biggest comment I saw people say is like, well, Jose, maybe Rivian just needs a better QA team internally, right? So the vehicles leave without issues. And I can agree a little bit to that, but issues will always arise after the fact. And especially on a software-defined vehicle, sometimes the software is a culprit.
Are you saying at launch, at the build, after post-build?
Yeah,
or post,
Yeah.
I mean, I think that just seems to be an easy one for them to kind of like.
But that's not going to solve. That's not going to fix all of them, right?
No, I mean, the stuff I had mine fixed was QA stuff, but it's the same things I went through with my Tesla, where it was like, okay, like this is like they did a lot of stuff at mine, but it was like it was aesthetic, you know, mostly aesthetic. Sure. But I was going to say too, you know, I think, and you and I have spoken about the fact that there needs to be more transparency around their improvements, but also like, I want to give them credit, right? And that's what, you know, like my experience has been much better, right? It is getting better, right? And I think that that's important, you know, but
100%, 100%. It's,
you know, they should, well, it almost begs the question, hopefully they know why it's getting better, right? Like, I mean, they're doing things. And what I mean by that is like, if we're not hearing about it, you can also ask the question, like, are they aware it's getting better? Are they have the right metrics? Are they not, why are they not bragging about it? I always would tell teams in the past, like, that it worked for me. It's like, brag about what you're succeeding. Like, tell me, like, you got it.
Yeah.
And that's not coming out, right? But like, somewhere in the process, they no longer are pushing back on clients needing to get their car, to the service center. Now, I don't know whether my truck's going to the local one in Charlotte, which is very, very, very small. They've told me that, like, or whether it's going to Greenville or it's going down to Atlanta. I don't know. Right. But like, however it's happening, it's a smoother experience for me. And I think that's great.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, we can talk all day about that stuff, but let's talk about something. I texted you and said, Mike, I want to talk about dealerships. And you were like, oh boy. And I say that because, I had a recent dealership experience last year when I got my Wise Ioniq 5. But
I'm so sorry really to hear that.
what? The car is great.
Oh, I know that. I meant the dealership experience. I know the car is great. When we got that, that was awesome.
I will say this: the dealership located here in Florida was actually really nice. And truthfully, I was able to do everything online. It was just like the whole, you know, still, it's just still like an experience of going to a dealership.
Sure.
Yep. And I was a little bit spoiled because I've had Tesla and I've had Rivian, so like I don't go to dealerships, and that's just maybe spoiled Jose talking, but. That less of that and more about recently. So a couple of weekends ago, my wife and I were out and I went to film some content for our friend Kyle from Out of Spec. And somebody's going to complain about the fact that I talked about Kyle and Out of Spec, because every video I talk about him, they're like, why do you always bring up Kyle? Great guy. Love him. He's a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. But I went and recorded some content on the VinFast VF9, which is now out and whatever. So, and then after that, that was a pretty decent experience, right? I was like the only person at the dealership because I don't think people know.
You were at the VinFast dealership, is that right?
Or yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 So we have one here in Orlando. So I went to it, told the guy I want to record, super easy, right? No issues. But on my way out, my wife and I, we drove by a VW dealership and we saw a bunch of ID Buzzes out. Buzz. Yeah. And I told my wife, like, you know, I want to go check it out. Let's stop and check it out. Cause I actually haven't like driven one or like really seen one up in person. Like I haven't had the chance. So we did. And it did not take more than a microsecond of me stepping out of the car for this guy to come out and like come and attack me. And like, you know, why are you here? Are you trading in the Rivian? I'm like, no, I'm not trading in the Rivian. Let's calm down. I'm here because I just want to see the ID Buzz. Like, you know, I see them around, you know, there's a nostalgia factor. I'm curious about it. Mm-hmm. So he kind of walks us over to the cars. He's like, these are the ones we have. And then he's like, you know, he asked me the question of like, do I know that this is electric? And like, have I ever driven an electric car? And I go, I'm driving a Rivian. He's like, oh yeah, that's electric. I'm like, yes. So, and then he starts talking to me, but he starts talking utter nonsense about EVs, like about how they just doesn't have really good range. And I understand that the Buzz is not perfect, but like, you know, oh, you got to charge it every night because you're not going to be able to get around town. And, you know, and like, he's clearly trying to not sell me on the vehicle.
And you wonder why, like, and you just wonder why there's an adoption problem with EVs.
And I'm sitting there, my wife goes, she's like, after the fact, she's like, are they just not trying to sell electric cars? I'm like, yeah, literally that is exactly what's happening here. Like, this guy who, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful or mean, but you could tell he was an older gentleman, not very much EV aware. And I say, okay, can you like, you know, he's like, we're looking at them outside. And I'm like, can you grab me a set of keys? Like, I'd love to look inside, take a drive. He's like, well, I can't take you for a drive unless like you sign a paperwork that says you're going to buy it. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not here to buy. I'm literally shopping. Right. Like, I'm not at the point where I'm ready to buy it. Well, it's like, if you want to drive something, I can drive you an ID4. I'm like, well, no, I've driven ID4s before. That's not the same. Like, that, which is electric. I'm like, yeah, but it's not the same. Like, that's just like, no, yeah. Please stop. So I tell the guy, I'm like, can you get me key? Can I at least look inside? So he begrudgingly goes inside and gets a set of keys and doesn't even get the set of keys for the one I wanted to see, which had like the sunroof and everything. So he gets me one that's just like a plain black one. I'm like, well, this is boring. And whatever. So I sat inside of it. I'm like, wow, this is massive. And like, you know, the ID Buzz in general, like it's a huge van. And I'm like, what is this monster? And I'm like, I'm 6'3", and I'm standing next to that thing and it's taller than me. And I'm like, this is massive. Whatever. Okay. Well, wanted to drive it, couldn't drive it. So, you know, we leave. He's like, oh, come on in. We'll sit down and talk numbers. I'm like, well, I'm not buying, and honestly, you wouldn't even, and I tell him, I'm like, you wouldn't even let me test drive it, so I'm definitely not going to sit down and do numbers with you. If I was interested, I would just go to the other VW dealership across town where maybe I'll have somebody with a better experience. And he got really upset and defensive, and I'm like, I'm not trying to offend you, but like, you've come to me, and my wife's like, oh my god, stop it, you're making a show. I'm like, I'm not making a show. I'm like, I'm just saying, like, I came in here to check out this car, and if I was somebody who didn't really know anything about this, like, I learned absolutely nothing other than you told me it's not really good and it has very low range.
And you want to buy it though.
Right. And he's like, oh, and it costs $80,000. I'm like, Jesus, no wonder these things aren't selling. So, cause they had like 12 or 13 on the lot, like a lot.
Yeah.
And, so what I ended up there leaving with was a distaste, like just a distaste in my mouth, because all I wanted was an experience where I could walk in, take a look at the vehicle, check it out, maybe ask some questions, learn about it, test drive it, and then, you know, decide if that was something I'm interested in. And I can't do that. I can do that with Rivian. I can do that with Tesla. But I can do that with Lucid. But I just cannot.
You can do that with the driveway concierge.
You can do that. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But like, you know, but like, why, tell me, Mike, like, why is this so difficult? And why are dealerships just so freaking difficult?
I think there's a couple pieces here to think about. First, you know, just remind all the viewers, right, that dealerships are franchises, right? So they're franchisee owners, right? They're owners, individual franchises. So they're not the direct-to-consumer model where if you go to a Tesla dealership, every Tesla's kind of has the same blueprint, so to speak, right? So I think that's the first step. So not all dealerships are created equally, right? And I think that's important, right? So you walk into one VW dealer, it's going to be different than another, assuming they're owned by different companies, right? And, you know, I'll start with like a little bit of a story that kind of got me started on my company. It was at the New York Auto Show a couple of years ago. I was actually at a Ford Lightning, and I had a Lightning at the time. And I was speaking to two people there who were just browsing, right? And looking at the car, and I was telling them my experiences, and they were just absolutely enamored with it. Then there was a Ford rep who was also there and helping answer questions. And I clearly knew more than they did, but they were nice enough, right? And, you know, like, yeah, because this was early on in the light. I got the Ford Pro. I got the when it just came out, right? So like the Lightning is the hot thing, right? And I looked around and I said, you know, this is, again, before the driveway concierge even existed. I was saying, you know, people genuinely like cars. I think that, you know, it's one of those things that like folks want to do what you just did, right? Was sit in it, feel it, drive it, and not have the pressure. Because I looked around and I saw 50% men, 50% women. You know, you kind of get this idea that just men want to buy cars. Like, no, women really like cars as well, right? And they want to have a good experience. You can do that at an auto show. There's no pressure to buy anything, right? And that was where like the idea kind of popped in my head, where I was like, how can I make this experience better for folks? So that when that time comes to go look at a vehicle, you don't have the experience you just had, right? Because in that sense, when you're walking onto the dealership, and this is where, you know, I'm a little bit torn too. It's like, these are folks who are professional salespeople, right? It's their job to sell you a car. Unfortunately, that doesn't reconcile with just browsing, right? Now, there's a funny post by a couple folks on X who said, you know, he's a good friend of mine, but he's posted, you know, you'd be shocked how many times just browsing turns into a purchase vehicle. And by shocked, I mean way higher than you think, right? They're salespeople. That's their job. They need to put food on the table. And I say all that because like, it's just the kind of the nature of the beast. When you set your foot on this, on the dealership grounds, that's going to happen. Unfortunately, that makes for a really terrible experience. I agree with you. Even when I go like shop for something, if I'm not using a contact that I know, it's like, oh my God. And then it's like the stuff they try to tell me, it's like, whoa, come on, man. Like, this isn't even close to true. And that's where, you know, I think it kind of detracts a bit from the experience. Now, you know, the dealership, you know, it's all very, it's not perfect, right? And I think that the folks there, you know, the successful ones, right? There's, I've worked with all across the range, right? Folks who are very pushy in the sense of like what you just experienced. And then there's also folks who are like, hey, look, you know, come back when you're ready, you know? And I think that, you know, the latter is more in line with, you know, the experience that I want to create for my clients. But I think that, you know, those types of salespeople, I don't want to say they're more or less successful, but, you know, I'd imagine in the long term, those that have less pressure are kind of where the market's moving, because people are getting more exposure to the DTC model, right? With Tesla and Rivian and Lucid, right? Where like you can go to Lucid's in like a mall, right? And you walk in there and there's, you know, that's a different experience. And they're just like, cool, you want to buy it? Cool. You don't want to buy it? Cool. You know, like, I mean, whatever works, right? And that's where I think people are more gravitating toward. And that's, you know, it's, and that's where the dealerships, back to my point around them being franchises, those that embrace, you know, a less, you know, there's a big talk around no haggle dealerships now, kind of adopting the Carvana model, where like the price you see is the price you see, right? And it's like,
and I think that's, the way I see it, right, is like when I go into an Apple store, I'm not negotiating the price of a laptop, right? Like I know what I'm going to pay for that MacBook Pro, you know? And that's kind of what I like about Rivian. And like some people may not like it. Some people probably do like the haggling and the hassling, right? That comes along with owning a vehicle, like going to a dealership.
I hear it a lot, but, yeah.
Yeah. But like, I enjoy the direct, like this is, it's like everything else in life. Like you go to a supermarket, you're not like, oh, I'll give you $4 for that bread, right? Like, no, like, you know, you're paying, you know, whatever price is on
the market price. Right. And that's the problem, the market price, right? For the bread. My qualm with it is that, you know, you can go to two different, whatever dealership, we'll just keep using VW. And from here on out, it's not going to be VW. It's just, it is, you can go to VW dealerships 5 miles apart from each other.
Sure.
And pay $5,000 different, or get offered the same vehicle $5,000 apart from each other. That's not uncommon. Yeah. Right. And I think that that's where, you know, because there is a claim that, you know, the no haggle dealerships, that you can get a lower price if there is negotiation available for the consumer. And I buy that, but I don't necessarily know. And, you know, when you look at it in aggregate, right? I mean, are people getting more better prices or more ripped off in aggregate when you look at all the deals and sales that happen, right? So that's where the big argument comes, where it's like, you know, oh, well, you know, we let you, you know, negotiate with us, right? And they're not giving these cars away, right? And that's where, you know, they will certainly rob you blind. You know, like, it's not like, oh, you got us and we'll give you $5,000 off, but they'll charge you $5,000 over anytime they want, right? Again, when you step foot on the dealership lot, and I keep saying this, not in defense of that, but it's more just awareness, right? It's like, you have to be careful because you can get sold, and it happens all the time, right? And it's like, and you know, though they give you, it gets very overwhelming quickly. You get confused between trims. You have a trade-in, you have this, you all these things to consider. And then you spend 3 hours there. You're like, well, I'm pot committed at this point, 3 hours here. I'm going to buy that VW Buzz for $80,000. I guarantee you somebody, well, maybe not the Buzz right now, but somebody has done what came in with your experience and then walked out with a car, you know. And that's, and you know, and if you're the only one on the lot, that guy's going to swing and swing and swing and swing and swing and just keep trying, right? And then, you know, so that's where it's just unfortunately just not compatible with a good, you know, customer experience.
Yeah. And I mean, and so with all that being said, do you think the dealership model is sustainable? Like, do you think we're going to continue to see this exist, or do you foresee a future where we just go direct to consumer for everything like this?
I think
knowing that your job relies on this dealership model.
So, you know, interesting, you know, that's an interesting point though, but my job doesn't, and that's why I'm different.
Okay.
Cause there are other broker style services, and I've had clients who I've asked them and seen clients call, and they'd be like, I don't work with Tesla, or I don't work with Rivian. And I think shame on them, because my job, and we've talked about this, is anybody can get you a good deal on a car. Anybody can get you a good deal. Not everybody can find you the right car. And that's really what I'm building my brand on, right? Whereas I want to spend time with my clients to really understand, hey, is a Rivian the right fit for you? Is a Tesla the right fit for you? I work for my clients directly, not for the dealership. So, or Rivian or Tesla or anything like that, right? So it just doesn't, I want to find the right car for you. So I think the DTC model has some inherent advantages, right, in terms of transparency, right? Which, you know, okay, so that takes away a little bit of the service that I'm providing my clients in terms of transparent pricing and negotiating and all that. But again, that's not, I'm not building a business on transparent pricing. I'm building a business on finding the right car for my clients. So the DTC model is great from that perspective. It has flaws in the service model, right? The fact that Ford has, I have a client out in Idaho right now, and there's not, and there happens to be a Ford dealership in like Sun Valley, Idaho right now. And there's nothing for like 3 hours outside of that. So they're getting a Ford, but like, awesome, right? I mean, Ford is able to be there to service, and they're like, we can't buy another car because we don't want to have a problem and have to go somewhere else, right? Like, so there's some inherent advantages to having that footprint. Now I think that what I would encourage the OEMs to look at is standardizing the experience. And, you know, what I've got, you know, some background in this space, kind of a prior life. And like, when you walk onto three different Ford dealerships, for example, you know, locally here, I've had, you know, they're not standardized. There's not a standard operating procedure.
No.
Or how to engage clients, right? That's up to the dealerships. And I think that that's where the the flaw in the model comes in. But I think that, you know, because of lobbyists and all these other things, like, I don't think you're going to see, it's going to be an uphill battle for a DTC style model to come to the States. Now, Ford is trying to do it. I believe you can order your Mustang Mach-E online in some cases. And Lightning is kind of moving in that direction. Now, I don't know whether that's going to be an EV only type approach, yeah, which is also back to the standardization of like how to standardization of experience on dealership grounds. Because like when you go to Ford, I walked in and spoke to a salesperson, and this is just anecdotal. I said, sell me on this Lightning. And he didn't know I had one. And he starts talking about the 12-inch infotainment screen. I go, and now I've had three F-150s prior to that. Yes. And a Lightning. I was like, and you're going to talk to me about the infotainment screen. You're not going to talk to me about the power frunk that solves the biggest problem in full-size pickup trucks is having lockable storage, right? You're not going to talk about 0-60 in 4.5 seconds. You're not going to talk about the fact that it no longer gets under 20 miles to the gallon. You're not going to talk about like all the convenience of electric. You're going to talk about the infotainment, and then you wonder why no one's buying EVs. You go to the VWs, and it's like, and that's what gets me really upset. But like, that's a different conversation from where dealerships are. But like, the DTC model, I think, is something that could be adopted, but it can only happen if both sides come together, right? And the franchises that own the dealerships, there's not incentive, right? There's a disincentive, and I can't speak precisely to the compensation structures or anything like that. Sure. Right? But like, if Ford is selling direct to the consumer, and this is what you got, I think you could, I don't know if you're on the computer, like go to the Mach-E, order a Mach-E online, comes there. It's the deal is consummated by the dealership, right? They may not get paid as much. There may not be as much margins on there as they can sell an ICE F-150, right? So you get a Mustang Mach-E or a Lightning or whatever. And they're just, and that's what they do in Europe, I believe, where they just close the paperwork. It's an agency model, it's called. So the dealership here, like, why would they want to sell EVs? And, you know, if they're not going to make as much money on them,
right?
Versus an ICE truck where that's going to sustain their model, right? They don't, and back to like, they want to make money. It's a business, right? Like, they're not necessarily concerned about getting you in the right car, right? So it's like, I mean,
no, that's never been their thing, right?
They want to sell you what they have on the lot, not what they have, you know.
It's such a weird thing that old Jose from many years ago would go into a dealership with the mindset of something and then would leave with something else, right? Because it's whatever they had, and they would way to getting you to what you want.
I had a client the other day who thought she had a car. She gave me the specs. I called my dealership and they had the same one she was at without me. And it was they had one that matched, and it was a service loaner. So she was leasing, and I was like, cool, that's a fine thing to do, lease the service loaner.
Yeah.
And she's like, how did they not tell me about this when I was there? I said to her, I was like, well, I mean, I said it nicely. I was like, well, I mean, you weren't with me, so I told you not to go there, right? Like, because they're only going to sell you what was on the lot that day. They weren't going to go and say, hey, look, you know, I can pull this car out of service when it gets done in a week and a half, right? Because it matches your specs exactly. Now, when I called my guy, he was like, oh yeah, we'll just pull it out of service, because he knows when you have the relationship, right? But when you walk into that storefront, she could have bought that another car that was they were trying to sell her, but it wasn't the right match because they're trying to make a sale. And that, I don't think anybody's wrong. It's just, that's just the environment that we're operating in, right? And it's like, it's not malicious. They need to, and it's just, but we all need to kind of like lower the temperature, but also recognize and go in there in an informed manner. You know, where it's like, this is how, now it's unfortunate because something like the Buzz needs more buzz. It needs people seeing it and getting in it and understanding like the size of it. And that's, but like that guy's like, oh, I'm not going to make a sale. I'm not interested, you know, or they're not making as much money on them, you know, so I'm not, you know, the dealership's not incentivized to move them.
So. Yeah. So, you know, that kind of, I want to segue a little bit there. And that is, you know, we had somebody on X ask this question, and I mean, this is a valid question. There are people who end up, you know, trading in their Rivians into dealerships, right, to get something else. It happens, right? It doesn't end up working out for them. And so now this dealership is left with this R1T or R1S. Sometimes they flip it around and sell at auction, right, whatever it may be. But sometimes they just put it on their lot and try to sell it. What How do we feel about that? Like, how do you go into a dealership that already, and this is I'm making a generalization, but understand that this is not the case across the board. But if you're going to a dealership that already doesn't really understand EVs or doesn't mm-hmm. grasp their own EVs, right, let alone a competitor, how can somebody go in and be like, yeah, I'm interested in that Rivian out there, and they're like, okay, what? You know, well, how do you even like approach that, and like how does that get resolved?
I mean, you're on your own with, you know, like, yeah, I mean, that's right? What, I mean, it's just not something where, I mean, I routinely find salespeople, and, you know, some people may get upset by me saying this, who don't know their own collection of cars that they
sell. Yeah.
It's, they may have five. I would argue that most brands have between three and five cars that actually matter. Right. I mean, you can go walk on a Mercedes lot and there's like 50, right? Like, and it's good. These brands are getting way too many cars, right? Like,
yeah.
And it's like, okay, fine. If you don't know every spec of every, but like, I mean, I don't decline a car before, like I do every brand and I figure it out. Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, and so, you know, it's kind of, and so then a Rivian is just an absolute, you know, wild card. They're never going to understand it. And I think it, you know, it does a little bit of a disservice to buy one there. I think, if you don't have a coach, right, or someone who can help you right. like understand it or introduce you to the brand, because there's so many more nuances. Like we talked about, like why I was excited about getting my R1S back. That was a late production Gen 1. I don't know the nuances, but it drove two cars. Now, I mean, like it can happen with any brand, right? I mean, like over time, I know Tesla's very transparent about the fact that on like they make changes in the midst of production line, right? Like they stop and change things along the way. Model years. I don't believe Rivian has many model years, if any, right? We don't, there's not really like a destination.
Well, yeah, yes and no. So like 2022 to 2023 was, you know, the Gen 1, and then Gen 2 has started in 2025. And we expect we'll see a 2026 model year Rivian here soon. And most likely that one will include the NACS adapt, you know, NACS.
Sure, ports, like, but right? Mine, so like, I bought mine in 24. It was produced in, I don't know, February or March or something like that. I mean, but it doesn't say 24, but like the production quality of my car feels a lot better than some of the, I've driven a couple. I was in Atlanta and drove a few of their demos. They were definitely rattling more and everything.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, like in those, and then the loaner I had, you know, like now I don't know what my car is going to be like at 30,000 miles. You know, but
although
yeah,
I mean, we can agree the loaners get beat up regardless.
They do get beat up. So it's not so, necessarily a fair,
right.
But I did drive that when I did drive my demo drive in Atlanta, that those cars only had like 2,000 or 3,000 miles on them, and they were loud.
Yeah.
Wow. I heard a lot, and I know they made suspension changes and all that. So it's just, but those are all questions, right? I mean, now the other day I drove three or four 4Runners that were within 5 years old, and they all drove wildly differently from one another. That's and they crazy. All had under 30,000 miles, and they were Toyotas. So
yeah,
like,
I mean, anybody, it's just, this every, is work, yeah, every car.
Every car. Every company is guilty of it now. And those are Toyotas, right? I mean, those are 4Runners. Those are the same. They've fundamentally been the same truck for the last 15 years, right? Like, and there's still variation between them. And that's where, you know, buying pre-owned is just a tricky proposition. Now, I also know that, and keep me honest, is it 5 years, the warranty on the Gen 1 quad motors, mm-hmm. right? It's like 5 years, which is something that folks who are looking for pre-owned Rivians, right? That quad motor is a pretty good deal. You get a nice long warranty on it.
Yeah.
And that's for the body, that's for the bumper to bumper, right? Or is that just beyond the battery? I forget.
Yeah, they have a manufacturer's warranty still included in there, and I'd have to look it up. I'll post the links, but I think the general consensus is if you're looking at a pre-owned Rivian, your best bet is just to go on Rivian's pre-owned website, right? Like go directly through Rivian. No different than buying a pre-certified or a certified, you know, pre-owned vehicle from Honda or whatever. I think that you're better, like, while Rivian doesn't call their vehicles, you know, certified pre-owned, they are still, you know, they have their warranty, they're inspected, they go through all the stuff, and maybe it'll cost you a little bit more, maybe it won't, but like I feel like if you're looking for a pre-owned Rivian, that might be the best way to go about it.
And you're going to pick it up there, right? I mean, like, you're going to pick it up at a service center. I think there's some advantages there where it's like, hey, look, is this normal? And I'm sure Rivian would be like, it's not normal. Hold on. Like, you know, before we want, you know, like versus you go to Ford dealer, like, good if I know, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's just one of those things where like, you'd be like, I've never sat in this thing before. I don't know. You know, cause there's a lot of things like wind buffeting and all that, that were early on. Right. Those are things that, you know, that you got to think about. That's something where folks are looking at early gen productions. You're going to hear a lot more wind buffeting around the side view mirrors and up top around the, and that stuff gets
100%.
You know, there's a lot of variation there. And those are things that, you know, you got to think about.
I think that's a good point there to kind of transition and kind of wrap up on talking about what you do in your business, right? I think I've let you hold out long enough. So let's talk a little bit about your business that you call the Driveway Concierge. And tell people a little bit about what your business does, right? Like, what do you help people? Because all this stuff that we kind of talked about is stuff that you can help people with who are interested in buying a vehicle.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Driveway Concierge was really founded, you know, with the idea that I wanted to help people find the right car at the right price. It's really simple, right? And, you know, I found it because I had tons of friends and family coming to me saying, oh, I just bought this car. Was it a good deal? Did you sign the paperwork already? And they're like, yeah, I did. And it's like, oh, it's a great deal now. You know, like, it's too late. And that's what I want to get in front of, right? And so when you work with me, we really sit down and make this a personalized, like, done for you type service, right? We're going to sit there. We're going to talk through a nice long matchmaking questionnaire that, and by long, it's like 20 questions. It takes you 5 minutes. So don't get too worried. But it really kind of helps us hone in on what exactly you're looking for, how you're using your vehicle. From there, then we play that matchmaking game where we'll get online together. We'll have a virtual call like this, where I'll talk you through maybe 6 or 8 options. You know, one of the really common asks for me is someone coming to me saying, look, I got a budget of around $60,000, a 3-row SUV. I have 2 kids, a dog, and no time, right? Like, what do I need to be looking at, right? That's like 99% of America, right? They're just sitting there like, I need a new, like when you're shopping for a new car, those are the types of things. But that market is wildly populated, right? There's a ton of cars in there. We work through that matchmaking together. We kind of narrow that list down from 6 or 8 cars down to like 2 or 4 that kind of really fit your needs pretty well, right? And that's our short list. From there, if you happen to live in Charlotte with me, I'll come with you on the test drives and really kind of like make sure that everything is on the ship is being, you know, steered properly. If you are out of state, I can certainly help there too. I call ahead, make sure all your appointments are set up, speak to the dealers ahead of time. The salespeople know you're not buying a car that day. And then from there, you know, like they know you're going to, you know, I do everything from Ford to Ferrari. So you can go to BMW, Mercedes, Audi. That's a pretty common track, right? You're kind of checking out those cars in that competitive segment, right? From there, you and I just circle up and we talk, figure out what the right car is. And then I handle all the negotiating. We'll usually get it delivered to your house. And it's pretty easy. I mean, Cox Automotive had a study that said, you know, on average, people are spending 20 hours shopping for their new car. A lot of clients come to me and they're like, by the time they get to me, they're like 20 hours. Like, I've blown through that, which is really kind of scary to think about. But like, you really add up all the YouTube, watching those videos, you know, out of spec, right? It's going to take you 3 hours to get there. No shame on Kyle. But we know, but that's, but you have to get, but he has that because there's so much information to digest, right? And you 100%. Really need to, and you're still not going to go through all of that, right? So at that point though, you can spend 20 hours doing all the negotiating. And I always say, like, just because you sat at the dealership for 3 hours, is that's not negotiating. That's just wasting your time. That's not how you negotiate, right? And with that in mind, you could spend 20 hours, you might not have gotten the right car or the right deal. Right. So like, or a good deal. So it's like one of those things where this is something, it's the second biggest purchase you're making behind a home, right? You have a real estate agent, you know, think of me as a real estate agent for cars. And that's the simplest way to kind of go about it and explain what I do. It's something that, you know, really isn't offered, you know, to the level of, you know, white glove service and delivery and talking through that I do with my clients. I really pride myself on taking the time to really find the right car. Like we talked about, like, some folks, and you know, the term broker comes up, and that's not what I am. I think of myself as something, you know, more specialized than that. But those folks they're not going to get you a Tesla, right? Because there's no money for them in there. I work directly for my clients, not for the dealerships, and it helps me be brand agnostic, which I think is really important in that landscape. You know, to find the right car for them without having any kind of internal biases. Certainly, I have my favorite cars, but you know, at the end of the day, it matters more, you know, what's on that matchmaking form and what's the right vehicle for them. I'm not pushing EVs. I'm not pushing anything. It's like, I want my customer to be happy. Now, I can talk to them about an EV and kind of dispel some of the you know, the concerns that some folks have, or tell them that, hey, look, the Buzz doesn't get really great range, but like, hey, you don't go on road trips and you have a Suburban too that's a gas powered, so take that. So yeah, that this can save you a whole bunch of money. Or, you know, like, this is your only car, maybe not a great fit. You know, again, I don't care what you get. And I mean that in a sincere way, in the sense of like, let's find you the right car. So that's kind of the Driveway Concierge in a nutshell.
That's awesome. Well, I'll make sure to include links to your website, and then also your social media, where folks can follow you on X, where you're pretty active and you actually share, you know, very good tips and tricks and just talking a little bit about it. And you're really good about answering people's questions on there if somebody comes at you. So make sure you follow Mike on there. It's at the underscore driveway C. And that's for Mike there. And you can check out all the fun stuff that he's posting on there. And I mean, I hope, you know, if someone's listening to this and they're either A, you know, looking to get a second vehicle, or, you know, maybe, I don't know, would you help them get a Rivian?
Yeah, absolutely. Even? I've got a number of clients, Rivians. I can also help, like, I kind of think of myself as a car problem solver. So there's a lot of clients who call me. They're like, hey, look, I just need this specific vehicle and VIN, order it for me. I go handle all the negotiations. So we don't need to do the whole end to end. That's kind of, you know, just a more unique offering. But, you know, folks call me all the time. Hey, look, I need a Grand Cherokee in this color. I don't want to deal with the dealership. Go get me the right price. But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I know when I was in December, when I was looking to get my wife's Ioniq 5, I texted you all the information. I was like, Mike, I just want to get your thoughts and opinions on this because you are like the guy. And I was going through a dealership. They had a special thing, so it wasn't something that you could physically help with. But because I asked you, I'm like, could you help me get something better? But the reality was that was a really good deal already, because it was through Lease Hacker or whatever. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that worked out. But you were like, yeah, dude, that's fantastic. Like, you know,
10 sometimes that's like, all people need, right? Is like, I offer some coaching calls too, where it's like, hey, look, let's talk through the numbers and what does it make sense? And, you know, where are you at?
Validation.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, you know, not everybody's the expert, right? We leave that to people like you.
And so, you shouldn't be, right? I mean, it takes a lot of time to become an expert, and your time is better off spent probably doing what you do day to day, right? Go focus on that. Don't spend 20 hours for something you're going to do once every, call it 3 to 5 years, right? That's not a good ROI on that investment.
No, heck no, no. Well, Mike, we're at an hour. Thank you so much for your time. I didn't know we would talk so much, but I mean, we didn't even get to talk about some other stuff we want to do. So we'll definitely have you back so we can talk other things, because there's so much to talk about. And a birdie told me you might be going through a rebrand. So we'll have to definitely have you back.
Yeah, maybe I'll be back then. That'd be perfect way to launch everything. So stay tuned.
Yeah. So, and I mean, and at the end of the day, like, yeah, it's great to be able to advertise your business, but you and I are friends and I don't have any monetary, there's nothing, you're not paying me or anything. I just want to make that clear that I invited you to talk Rivian and dealerships and all that. And, I support what you're doing and happily will help in any way, shape or form, but, you're not paying me for any of this. And that's, I don't want it. I just want to make that clear so that nobody thinks that this is a paid sponsorship or anything. It's not. Yeah. But thanks again, Mike, so much for joining me and chatting all fun things. Any last final thoughts? I'll make sure to throw your Rivian referral code down there in the comments and a link to your website and all that and your social media so people can find you and follow you if they are interested.
Yeah.
And any final thoughts?
No, I think the most important thing is I just appreciate everybody kind of, you know, any support that, you know, does come through the social media handles and everything is great. I kind of call it like I have a service awareness problem, because most folks who talk to me, they're like, wait, I can do this and have someone like help me through this. And that's what the general reaction is. So, you know, if you have friends or family who, you know, are looking just to make this process be a little less cumbersome, time consuming, expensive, all of those things, right? Here to help and excited to kind of continue to build this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll, for sure. We'll get your name out there and make sure people know who you are. Well, Mike, thanks again. And we'll see you next time. Thanks everybody again for tuning in to this episode of Rivian Tracker Hangouts. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you haven't. If you're watching this, leave a comment below on the YouTube. And remember, you can find this on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music, and wherever you listen to your podcasts as well. I'll see you guys next week. Have a great one. Take care.